Hello, all. Welcome to the Ex Millennial Man podcast, the podcast for SeedSing.com. I am your host, R.D. Kulik, and with me here is that I'm going to recycle the joke again as he sits in seclusion while I go back to take over our broken company is the Steve Wozniak to my Steve Jobs, and that's Ty. All right, maybe I should call you the Tim Cook to my Steve Jobs, because you'll carry on when I decide to go away.
Hi, everybody. I'm good. No, I like the Wozniak one because I was talking to my friend Kirk about it, and I told him definitely side with Wozniak, and he's like, I don't side with either, but I'm a Wozniak guy.
Steve Wozniak doesn't really play much more into this story. He's still around. He still talks about Apple products. I think I remember famously when the iPhone 12 came out, he was like, oh, this is great. I love the iPhone. And when the 13 came out, and he's like, why would I buy another 12? And everybody's like, oh, he's trashing Apple or whatever. But he kind of sits back on his money, tries not to pilot any more planes or start any music festivals. But he's,
I hope not.
He's kind of been removed out of this story. Well, Ty, the last thing we talked about was February of 1997, Apple completed their acquisition of Next, Steve Jobs' company. Again, I knew I would get a lot of corrections, and I appreciate it. I do know I've forgotten a lot of people are talking about that. I never talked about Steve Jobs and Pixar. When Jobs first left Apple, now I'm going to make this short because this isn't about Steve Jobs, this is about Apple. But when Jobs first left Apple, he invested, I think it was $10 million into George Lucas's computer animation company. Didn't even have a name yet. That's a lot of people don't know, too, that Pixar is actually founded by Lucas. And he put money into it and ended up, I think, took over the company. So Steve Jobs was ahead of Pixar when Toy Story came out and their first few runs of movies there. And as a matter of fact, there was when Disney bought Pixar, part of the deal was a stock deal with Steve Jobs. And all the way up to his death, Steve Jobs was the largest shareholder of the Walt Disney Company. So,
oh, man.
I know a lot of people. That. Yeah, I know. I know people were like, oh, you forgot about all that stuff. And I'm like, yes, I know about all of that. If you do go watch some of those early Pixar movies, Steve Jobs will be listed as the executive producer. And in Isaacson's book, Jobs said he made more money with Disney than he ever did with Apple.
Yeah, I would imagine. So, okay, for sure.
So I wanted to clarify that before we go back to Jobs coming back to Apple. Now, the first thing, Jobs was just on the board, but within months, there was a boardroom coup that got rid of their current CEO, and Jobs was named the interim CEO. And in his first year, Jobs canceled all the Apple clone programs, so no other companies could make Apple computers. He cut like 3,000 jobs. He convinced Microsoft to make a big investment and continue to make Mac software. And he was working on these kind of secretive projects, kind of the way he was at the beginning at Mac. And they were seeing, though, that their profits were turning around. Now, I'm going to put my social science hat here on, Ty, okay?
Okay.
It's 1998. We're coming to the year 1998, and Jobs has been the interim CEO for about a year. And he's going to an auditorium, the same auditorium he originally introduced the Macintosh, for a new product that's kind of been secretive. Oh, before I get to that, the other first thing Jobs did was he took the Newton, the last device we're talking about, the personal digital assistant. The rumor is he canceled it. He spun it off into its own company, but he kind of kept an eye on some of the developments because that's going to come in play later on. But he took that rainbow Apple logo, changed it to monochrome. So it's like always just black or white or just, what? Yeah. And then he paid for an ad campaign. Now, when the first part I played that ad for the Apple II, where all the people are like, my Apple II helps me do this. And then at the end, the little kid is like, this is my Apple II. Apple always trying to say you're special for using their products. All right. So he comes up with this ad campaign. Now, IBM, their tagline had always been think. You'd see an IBM ad and it would be like think. So Jobs, to just shoot straight across their bow, decided to come up with an ad called Think Different.
Okay.
Now, do you remember this at all?
Vaguely. I don't remember the commercials, but I do remember seeing Apple products in stores where it did say Think Different, but I didn't know that it was some veiled shot at Microsoft or IBM.
Yeah. Well, and there's The Simpsons where Lisa goes to work for Apple, and at the end she's handing out the flyers going, Think Different, Think Different.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to play the original Think Different ad. It's a minute long. And then I'm going to tell you kind of the history and some of the people involved with it.
Okay.
Here's to the crazy ones. The misfits. The rebels. The troublemakers. The round pegs in the square holes. The ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them. About the only thing you can't do is ignore them. Because they change things. They push the human race forward. And while some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius. Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do.
All right, do you know whose voice that is?
I would have guessed Steve Jobs at first, but I have no idea.
This is a funny story. It was supposed to be Steve Jobs, and there is versions of it out there that is Jobs' voice doing it, because the ad campaign, they were like, you're bringing Apple back. This is about the special Apple person. They did one recording with Richard Dreyfuss, and he said, I would rather have Richard Dreyfuss do it.
Okay. Now that you say that, it makes sense.
Yeah.
It sounds like him.
During that commercial, now the commercial was directed by Tarsem Singh. Do you know who that is?
No idea. Never heard of that person.
There was a Jennifer Lopez movie. Lee Pace was in it, called The Fall.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
The Jennifer Lopez movie I like is Out of Sight, though.
Now, The Fall is an interesting movie. The Fall is one I might do for first watch, rewatch, because it's one of these movies. It's very visual. It's a very, very visual movie. I think Vincent D'Onofrio is also in it, too. So he's a very visual kind of director. Well, this commercial was black and white of all these different people, as Dreyfuss says, here's to the rebels and all this other stuff. Now, I'm going to read for you in order who is in this commercial, who Apple is telling you, if you use their products, you're like these people.
Okay.
Albert Einstein, Bob Dylan, Martin Luther King Jr., Richard Branson, John Lennon, Yoko Ono, Buckminster Fuller, Thomas Edison, Muhammad Ali, Ted Turner, Maria Callas, Mahatma Gandhi, Amelia Earhart, Alfred Hitchcock, Martha Graham, Jim Henson, Kermit the Frog, Frank Lloyd Wright, and Pablo Picasso. And then it ends with Tarsem Singh's niece.
Huh. There's only three names I didn't recognize in that whole crew, but that's a pretty loaded roster of awesome people.
This is the time that Apple becomes like what my wife calls it, a fashion company. You use Apple products because you want to be like these people. All right. Yeah.
I want to be like Muhammad Ali.
So going back to what I was saying, I'm going to put my social science cap on. In the first part, it was a lot of this development was in the 1980s, early 90s. And this was the dawn of the personal computer era. It went from that green board that you had to make your own case for to a handheld thing that could shoot email across the room and stuff like that. Everything was kind of, I remember at that time because we had our hands on it. Now, that part of Apple is definitely the Generation X story, because I often tell people Generation X, we were lied to when we were growing up. We grew up in the 70s and 80s in this faux patriotism while the AIDS crisis is going on. And what are our great memories? Our school teacher sitting us down to watch a teacher go into space and her blowing up right in front of our eyes.
Oh,
you know, the Shuttle Challenger disaster.
That's
I mean, in class, sitting in class, everybody of my generation remembers that event. I weirdly did not watch it because that was the day I was diagnosed with a sickness that put me in the hospital for like 6 months.
The one where you couldn't walk.
Right? Yeah.
Because I had like a very mild form of it.
Yes. So that's a different story. But I mean, the biggest movie of probably Generation X that a lot of people will talk about is E.T., And what happens at the end? E.T. leaves, okay? He doesn't ever come back. Whereas the millennials, I heard somebody say this the other day, so I'm stealing it, but they said, you know, the millennials grew up in the 90s. And the 90s was like one big, massive cocaine party. It was...
What?
They're saying it was...
I'm a child of the 90s.
Hold on. It was it was way more fun. It was, I mean, you guys didn't have to worry about the Russians nuking us constantly. That's what I was told. There was a movie on TV about what would happen when the Russians blow up half of Kansas. And the 90s was like Clinton's really cool and he plays saxophone. And there was the dawn of the suit, the new super mega blockbuster. It was the colorful, stupid Batman movies. The problem is, while we were kids watching things like the Challenger explosion, you guys became adults or you were in high school when Columbine happened.
I was in high school. Yeah. I was a senior in high school because that's when we started what they call intruder drills now. That's when we started that.
Yeah. And then you guys were coming into adulthood when September 11th happened.
You called me in my dorm room when I was away at college to say, hey, wake up and turn on your TV. And I was like, it's 9 o'clock on whatever day of the week. Yeah, that was heavy stuff.
So as my generation, we were kind of on our own drinking from backyard hoses or whatever people would say. That
I still do that sometimes at home, dude. Like,
that where we had this kind of sense of Generation X has a sense of isolation, like we can do it on our own. Millennials, you grew up in a party atmosphere, and then you had these grand events that made you huddle together, that made you want to feel like we have to take care of each other.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely.
I bring all that up because of any company that understood how to speak to that millennial generation, it is Apple. It is the Steve Jobs version of Apple. He understood. So at this time, again, I'm talking about 1998, getting on the internet wasn't easy. A lot of times you would have to dial up. If you had a phone in your house and somebody was using it, you could not get on the internet. Mm-hmm. We were early in the days of Ethernet connections and hardwiring your internet. We just were not there yet.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, because you're older than I am, but at our house, I don't ever remember having a computer until we moved from our childhood home to where our parents live now.
No, I had an 800 computer, which was okay. It could do what it wanted to. But even in high school, here's one. A lot of people are going to be, well, you didn't go to a great college. I barely used the internet in college.
Yeah.
It wasn't there yet. The internet in the late 80s, early 90s was for academics and kind of nerds. It was these chat boards about like what's the best Dungeons and Dragons thing or something like that.
The comic book guys of the world.
I know a lot of people dump on this book and not the movie as much, but the book Ready Player One.
But oh, that movie is horrible.
But like I read that book and a friend of mine sent it to me. And it's like that reminds me, it's that mindset, this kind of like just geek culture mindset. That's what the internet was in the early 90s. But it was starting to grow. Like I said, the Ethernet things were coming out, but it was still reserved for, you had to have a modem and you had to have all these other extra devices to connect to the internet.
Yeah.
Well, back where he introduced the Macintosh back in 1984, in 1998, Steve Jobs, still wearing a suit, not wearing his black turtleneck.
Oh, man.
He comes out and he has
When am I going to find out when Elizabeth Holmes started ripping him off?
Yeah, oh, that's coming. Well, he comes out in the same auditorium that he introduced the Macintosh in. He invited Wozniak and the entire Apple II team to this event because this was the end of Apple as we knew it. He took all of their catalog, their inventory, everything prior to 1998. And he donated at Stanford's university because he said, Apple is about the now and the future. It's not about the past. We are going to do things completely different. And he went through this lengthy presentation about Apple's customer and how they still like when if I used a computer in college, it was to do newspaper design and it was an Apple Macintosh. We're using 10-year-old computers because that's what we were doing. So there was no reason for me to ever use an Apple computer. Of like while we go into this new age of computers, this new age of everyone having one. So during the course, he's talking about everything that Apple needs to do in order to cater to this market of creative people. Now, and remember, Ty, they've already done the Think Different ad campaign. And this is what Steve Jobs unveiled.
Well, today, I'm incredibly pleased to introduce iMac, our consumer product. And iMac comes from the marriage of the excitement of the internet with the simplicity of Macintosh. Even though this is a full-blooded Macintosh, we are targeting this for the number one use that consumers tell us they want a computer for, which is to get on the internet simply and fast. And that's what this product is targeted for. I also mean some other things to us. We are a personal computer company, and although this product is born to network, it also is a beautiful standalone product. We're targeting it also for education. They want to buy these, and it's perfect for most of the things they do in instruction. It's perfect for finding tremendous source of information over the internet, and we hope as you see the product, it will inspire us all to make even better products in the future.
So do you remember what the original iMac looked like?
No idea, because I don't think we had one.
No, but it was that like teardropped computer. It was like the screen.
Yeah. What's that movie? Zoolander.
Yes.
When they're like trying to get files.
Yes. Yeah. This is what Jobs knew. It had to look iconic. It looked iconic. It had to do what he said it did. You could literally, there was a commercial for the iMac where they said three steps to getting onto the internet. Step one, buy an iMac. Step two, plug in the Ethernet port or whatever. Step three. Oh, wait, there is no step three. Because that's what they said. That's how simple it was to get on the internet with this thing. And it introduced like with how great some Apple design is. And I think the iMac is an iconic looking computer. It also introduced Apple's hockey puck mouse, which was a mouse that was roughly the shape of a hockey puck. It is widely considered one of the worst things Apple has ever made.
Really?
Yeah, their mouses are terrible. I mean,
I thought you were talking about the computer.
No. The computer itself was great. It was slower than the average computer of the time, but it did what Apple said it would do, and it did it fast. It prioritized things for the iMac. And the price now, if you were to buy an equivalent computer at that time that could get on the internet, it was going to cost you $1,500 to $2,000. The iMac was priced at $1,299. That's equivalent to $2,400 today, but it was everything. It was all there. It was also, you probably don't remember the old legacy way you would have to plug in keyboards and mouse. There was these weird connectors. Well, there was a newer kind of connection out at this time called USB. The iMac was the first computer to use that.
Okay.
And a lot of the critics blasted it, saying, oh, well, nobody can plug in their old keyboards or mouse, so it's going to be a failure. But the thing came with a keyboard and mouse. Everybody hated the keyboard, too, by the way. Apple has never been good at making peripherals. I'll just tell people that now. Okay.
It's fascinating to hear you talk about this, because even back then, there were still people who wanted to gripe just to gripe.
Oh, yeah. No. Like I said, the iMac was iconic. Had everything built into it, like the original Macintosh. It was everything that Apple said it was going to be. And it was geared towards that two markets that Jobs was really interested in. The creative market, so the publishers, the musicians, things like that, and the school market. And schools, probably after you were out, but right after you were out, were being loaded up with iMacs. They were...
Yeah, I'm sure I had a ColecoVision when I was in my school.
It was an immediate hit. It was Apple's fastest selling computer ever. Now, mind you, when Jobs came in, they were weeks away from bankruptcy.
Yeah, that's what you said last week when we recorded.
So with this product, they completely started to turn the company around. They ended up, I mean, they would come in these translucent cases, these colors. There's a blue, a purple one, a yellow, a red. This is Apple really leaning into making products that when people pass them by, they know they're Apple products. They're like, oh,
yeah,
that's an iMac. Yep. It's not a regular computer.
And I think they're doing a better thing now by just putting an Apple on stuff.
Well, yes. But this was important that Jobs wanted people to know that's an Apple product, no matter what. Well, like I said, the iMac was doing really, really well. They had their Think Different campaign. We start to get into the 2000s. And like with any technology company, you got to try to keep up. Now, when I said in the early days, computers were being built on top of each other, the jumps in technology were years. Now the jumps in technology are a year. Things are changing very, very quickly. And in this time, Apple went out to buy a few companies. One of them they bought was a company that ended up becoming Logic Pro, which is their music for musicians. It's a music mixing system. I have Logic Pro on my computer. It is an absolutely incredible piece of machinery, or a software. They bought the company that did Final Cut Pro, which is where you can make movies. People like Steven Soderbergh makes his movies on Final Cut Pro.
Shot an entire movie on an iPhone.
Yes.
Good movie, too.
Yes. I think you might have cut that with iMovie, but With Logic Pro, they also made GarageBand, which is when I first started podcasting, that is the program I used to do all of our editing.
And when I had dreams of being a rhythm guitarist in a super famous rock group, I would record stuff on GarageBand and send it to my other bandmates.
Yeah. Yeah. Then they even have iMovie. My son just did a project for school. They had to do a documentary and he cut the whole thing with iMovie. Whereas Logic and Final Cut are very, I mean, Ty, they're very complicated programs. I have a different keyboard just for Final Cut.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense that you would have that.
But Jobs also knew that in order to keep Apple customers, you had to keep up with what they wanted. And he would start to call them, like, he would start to say that they're a digital hardware company is what he would say. But everything they had, the only real handhelds they had, per se, is they changed the PowerBook into the iBook, or they made a smaller version. Ever, like he said in his presentation, I means internet, but it also means, you know, your individuality and all this other stuff. So he comes out, and this is the first time you see him at a presentation in this black turtleneck and his jeans.
Okay.
So this was 2001, November 10th, 2001. He comes out for a special presentation. Again, people don't really know what's going on, called Apple Music. And okay. All these presentations are like an hour to 2 hours long. And Steve Jobs is a master. Like, I'm going to tell you, Ty, I have Jobs presentations in here. I'm not playing you any Tim Cook presentations, and I'll tell you why when we get there.
Okay.
But he comes out and he's talking about the way people listen to music. And he's like, they can listen with a portable CD player. They can listen with these new MP3 players. Or there were these, he called it digital jukebox, but these like hard disk systems. And he's like, and most of these things, you know, a CD, if you forget your CD, you're like, oh, I can't play that song while I'm driving. Or if you do any of these other things, they don't hold your entire catalog of music. Like, I kept thinking to myself about you and your Gutenberg Bible-esque thing of CDs that you would carry around.
I was talking to my daughter this morning about stacking stuff. Like, I stacked CDs, and she said, why did you have so many CDs, Dad? I'm like, I love music. I had, some would say, too many CDs. I thought it was the right amount.
So Jobs came out, and he talked about how Apple's going to get into this. He said this was the introduction of the iPod. Now, I'm going to play for you his comments, and then I'm going to talk to you a little bit about it.
What is iPod? iPod is an MP3 music player, has CD quality music, and it plays all of the popular open formats of digital music, MP3, MP3 variable bitrate, WAV, and AIFF. But the biggest thing about iPod is it holds 1,000 songs. Now, this is a quantum leap because it's your, for most people, it's their entire music library. This is huge. How many times have you gone on the road with a CD player and said, oh God, the CD, I didn't bring the CD I wanted to listen to? To have your whole music library with you at all times is a quantum leap in listening to music.
1,000 songs, Ty. Was that your music?
1,000 songs. I was going to say 1,000 songs of somebody's entire library is laughable. That's 10 CDs at 10 songs a CD. Like, or 100 CDs at 10 songs a CD. Pardon me. But like, you said, and it wasn't, I had that one big book full of CDs. I think it held like 450 CDs. I had other smaller books too.
Yeah.
I mean, that 1,000 songs would have gotten me maybe a tenth of the way through all the CDs I had.
I remember when you graduated from the college you went to, I think that's what we got you, an iPod. So you didn't have to.
I started out with like, I think it was like a 32 gig iPod or whatever. And it was amazing to me. And you know what, Steve Jobs, for all his foibles or whatever, to be able to take those CDs, put them on my iTunes, and then bring this little block thing around with me, plug it into my car, and I had all of my music on there, it was amazing that technology was around, and I could just hit play and shuffle on my thing, and I could hear hip-hop, blues, rock, alternative rock, like every type of music I wanted to hear in this teeny tiny little block.
Yeah, and it was around the same time that iTunes first started up, but that original iPod was, you would rip your CDs into your Mac, and actually, you could connect it to your PC, too. Sorry, it was not proprietary, just to Mac. And then you would, it would transfer over into your iPod. Now, one of the early iPods, I had a lot of battery problems. This is my wife, her situation. And you would go to the Apple store, which is also something else that Apple started to build, were these physical Apple stores. And they said they would either, you could either like pay $50 for a battery replacement, or they would give you like 10% off something. And the people got pissed at them for that. But as it went on, like, you had one of the final iPods. You had the big, massive
160 gig. Dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
It had everything on there. Plus, when I started listening to podcasts, I had podcasts on there. I had pictures. I had movies. We got our mom one so she could watch Lost while she was on a plane, which doesn't make any sense to me. But yeah, like the 160 gig iPod was, that became, until very recently, within the past couple of years, that iPod came with me everywhere. As you well know, I had that thing with me everywhere. It was in my car. I had plugs to plug it in and play everything. But that was my thing. And it wasn't like I still bought physical CDs and put them on there. But very soon after that, getting that 160 gig iPod was when I started to buy all my music on iTunes.
Well, and that was a couple of years later. I think it was 2003. Apple started the 99 cents a song.
That's what I was going to say, too, because like if I wanted a single for somebody, you had to buy the physical CD. And this was another CD taking up room in my Gutenberg Bible of CD things as you had. But yeah, if I could go on iTunes where I have an Apple account and just buy these random songs, it was so much easier than going on LimeWire or Napster and essentially wrecking our parents' home computer if I ever did that. Again, we never had one, so I'd go to friends' house to do stuff like that. And I know a lot of friends who crashed their family computer by going on LimeWire. iTunes made that so much easier.
Yeah, and I want to say this is where a lot of people are going to, when they talk about Steve Jobs and what he did at Apple, and it's like, well, he never invented anything. He flat out said he didn't invent this. He talked about it. I mean, the iTunes, they bought a company and then used their software and just rebranded it as iTunes.
Yep.
But the thing that Steve Jobs did do, and I said this in the first part, he was ahead of he wasn't the head of Apple at the time, but he was the face of Apple when they brought the Macintosh out, which is that or the Apple IIe. Those are the computers that put computers on everybody's desk. Okay, that was the start. Maybe you didn't have a Mac, or maybe you didn't have an Apple II, but most people I knew did. And then Apple changed the music industry with the iPod and iTunes. Totally. And how there's a lot of people who complain, me being one of them, that nobody makes albums anymore because you can just go buy a song for 99 cents. I think it's $1.29 now.
I still bought full albums because I'm a weirdo completionist.
No. And I mean, you find groups that they still make albums. They still.
Well, but the thing, too, is with iTunes that they did, I don't know if I'm going ahead or whatever, but you could buy a full band's album for $9.99, or I could go buy the CD for $14.99.
Yes.
So, well, I'm just going to buy the album. I don't want to spend $14.99 if I can spend $9.99.
I didn't record the rest of it. And this is, again, just the showmanship of Steve Jobs. But he sits there the whole time that I was playing that time. Nobody had seen the iPod. Okay. Nobody knew what this looked like. And he talked about it. He put up a picture of a deck of cards. And he said, oh, it's about this size and this. And he goes, here's some renderings of it. And everybody's looking at it. Oh, that looks nice. He goes, oh, hey, by the way, I have one in my pocket. He pulled it out and people saw 1,000 songs in somebody's hand, just sitting in their hand.
That would be pretty rad.
And it's kind of weird to think about, oh, 1,000, that's nowhere near my music library. But
even think of Parks and Rec when Tom Haverford showed Ron Swanson how to use an iPod. And Ron Swanson is the most anti-computer, anti-government person. He loved his iPod. That's what he kept saying. All of my songs, and all I have to do is press this tiny little wheel to go to the next one. That's how easy it was.
Yep.
Even Ron Swanson liked it.
Hello, all. This is RD, and I wanted to come in and say this episode of the Ex Millennial Man podcast is sponsored by our Patreon. Go to patreon.com and look up Ex Millennial Man podcast. You go there to help support Ty and I support the show, but it also, we're bringing out some exclusive content here for our patrons. So please come on over. Also, have some ideas for maybe a few giveaways, because don't you all want to be rocking your Ex Millennial Man t-shirt, beanie, hat, whatever it may be. And also, the show is brought to you by Public Forum Productions. That's a network of podcasts that the Ex-Millennial Man is part of, along with First Watch Rewatch, High Heels in Politics, and then coming soon, A History of the 1980 Satanic Panic. So again, patreon.com, Ex-Millennial Man, Public Forum Productions. Thank you, and let's get back to the conversation. Okay, Ty. So it's around this time, or it's actually when Jobs first came in. He pinched a guy from Compaq, worked for Compaq, by the name of Tim Cook. Now, we're going to talk a lot more about Tim Cook in a little bit here, but just so you know.
And I know his name, but I couldn't tell you what he looks like, who he is. I could tell you what Wozniak and Jobs look like, but I could not pick Tim Cook out of a lineup.
You listen to Tim Cook. He's an Alabama boy, baptized in the Baptist church. And like I said, we're going to talk a bit more about him later on, but he kind of becomes Jobs' right-hand man as Apple starts to explode. And the iPod, it's exploding. And they put a heavy ad campaign about it, which is those silhouettes of people dancing the music with the wired earphones.
Isn't it the Jet song?
Oh, yeah.
Are You Gonna Be My Girl or whatever?
Yeah, that's probably the most famous one. There are a lot of them. There are a lot out there. Apple now isn't just a computer that people have at their home or school or something like that. They're carrying it around their pocket now. They're carrying around their music. They're carrying around their jukebox.
You said something very telling to wired headphones. Like, yes. I forgot that I used to have a wired.
Oh, yeah, I'll get to that. Yeah. So the iPod is putting an Apple product into everybody's hands. So Apple's trying to capitalize on that to say that, look, we have other products that can make your life really, really easy. So they started to run these series of ads called I'm a Mac and I'm a PC.
Oh, with Justin Long and John Osborne,
yes,
right?
I'm going to play one for you so the audience gets a little bit of that nostalgia, but gets an idea of what we're going to talk about here.
Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC. What do you have there?
Oh, I was just looking at this photo book. I made an iPhoto. You want to see it?
Oh, sure. I'll take a look. Why not? Well, go on. Rip it in half. Nonsense. It's beautiful. Ask how he made it. Well, you don't care about arts and crafts. You like work. Would it hurt you to loosen your necktie every once in a while and have a little fun? Oh, fun. We tried that once. It was nothing but pain and frustration.
So what do you think?
It's good.
Explain to me who Justin Long and John Hodgman, what they look like in these commercials.
So Justin Long is a young, hip-looking dude with his like floppy hair, and a lot of people know who he is because I don't know if he was a famous actor at that point, but he had been in some stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like hip and cool, wears t-shirts and jeans. John Hodgman, very suit, full suit. Like, I think at that point, he probably just had a mustache or whatever. I believe.
He was clean shaven at that time.
Okay. I also believe, though, at that time, he was a Daily Show correspondent.
Yes.
So he's like a newscaster type guy. He looks very buttoned up, where Justin Long looks very hip.
Yes.
And they're both totally cool people.
Oh, no, yeah. But the idea was, and Apple was smart in doing this because, again, you have your iPod. So you're like, oh, maybe I'm going to get a computer, because now we're getting into an age where my generation, we're starting to work and are starting to get into our professions. I'm heavy into it. So maybe we're buying a computer for our home. And it's like all these that commercial I showed right there is, look at this cool thing I created personally for me with my Mac. And then the PC, John Hodgman's like, well, we just like to do work. We can't do cool stuff like that.
Yep. And it's funny, too, the way that nobody can see us, but I have a t-shirt, hat and shorts on, and you have like a sweater vest and a button up shirt.
Yeah.
We're kind of being those.
I have to go to a concert tonight, my kid's school. So I'm dressed. Normally, I'd be wearing my Cold Slither shirt or my Cincinnati shirt or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Apple is starting to get in there. Now, in the course of their entire history, of this new Apple, they're never going to be more than, I think, 7% of the home computer market. But because it's PC. PC is where Windows is where work is done. Okay. And that's what most people have. Plus, those computers tend to be a lot less expensive. Now, when you get into premium areas, Apple's pretty good. I am right now looking at you on my iMac. But again, I do podcasting. Okay. I have web design. I do these things that is built for me. I have right behind me a PC that I can continue to do my work. So like I said, they make money on their computer division, but it's not as ubiquitous as people have an iPod. I mean, I may be the only person that I know that did not have an iPod. I did have this.
So what? Yeah. What is that?
this is the Zune? Microsoft Zune.
Oh God, I can't believe it. So you were so pretentious that you couldn't get an iPod. You had to get a Zune.
Yep.
I think I remember you having that Zune also. How long have you had? Why do you have that stuff?
I have a little museum of my technology up there. I have like my BlackBerry and things like
that. I think I have my iPod in storage, but I don't know where in storage.
Well, the iPod was doing well. They had the Touch iPod. They had the one you were talking about got for mother that had the screen on it, all these other things.
Yep.
Well, the iPod was not, it was not a communication device. And the BlackBerry is starting to get very big. Apple was trying to figure out a way to maybe get in the communication device. And there's famously the Motorola Rocker phone.
Which, famously, I've never even heard of
it. Yeah, that's why I said it kind of sarcastically. Okay. It was a phone that had like iTunes in it and it could hold 99 songs.
Oh, so only a tenth of your entire catalog.
But that, like a lot of people say, well, that was the first Apple phone. No, it was not. That was Apple was not. They just had a licensing agreement. As a matter of fact, like Steve Jobs, Apple made tons of money off of a phone that disappeared. And Apple, going back to the Newton, was thinking about how important it would be to have some kind of communication device, how important it would be from just a standpoint, a company standpoint, because we're starting to get into the era of smartphones. The PDA is being built into phones now. But the smartphones at the time were the BlackBerry and BlackBerry clones. They were the physical keyboards and the click wheels and the small screens. So on January 9th, 2007, Apple did two important things. They changed the name from Apple or Apple Computers to Apple Incorporated. They said the reason they did that is because they weren't a computer company. Like Jobs was saying back in the iPod, they are a digital hardware company, the digital hardware and software company. On this day, he also changed, I would say, the course of the entire world when he announced this.
Today, we're introducing three revolutionary products of this class. The first one is a widescreen iPod with touch controls. The second is a revolutionary mobile phone. And the third is a breakthrough internet communications device. So, three things: a widescreen iPod with touch controls, a revolutionary mobile phone, and a breakthrough internet communications device. An iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator. An iPod. A phone. Are you getting it? These are not three separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone.
People had been waiting for some kind of Apple phone.
Those people were going nuts in the crowd.
But they were not prepared for what happened, what came out. That.
What do you mean?
And like everything else, Jobs had this thing in his pocket. Now, I have the latest version, so the original one is much smaller than this. Mm-hmm. But pulled out the slab that was just flat glass.
Only you and I can see, but I got it.
Whereas that's my BlackBerry.
I remember your BlackBerry.
There were no keys on it. It was just straight, like I said, straight glass.
Mm-hmm.
Like Apple stuff, had a very stylish look, had the Apple logo embedded on the back of it.
Yeah, right, and there on mine.
Yeah, and it was immediately a hit. I mean, immediately. Did you ever see the BlackBerry movie with...
It's funny you keep mentioning that, and I watched a movie on Hulu the other day. I know you've seen it and really like it. I've heard other people like it. I want to watch it.
There's a great part of that movie when the iPhone is being introduced and everybody and Glenn Howerter is like, I can't fully quote him because he uses the F word every third time, but he's like talking to Verizon, I think, or AT&T. And he's like, I have sold you guys a lot of minutes. You know, why are you doing this? Why are you taking this Apple phone that doesn't even have a keyboard? Nobody's going to want to touch nothing. And the AT&T guy is like, there's something worth more than minutes. And that's when he realized that Apple is selling data, not minutes. And that's kind of where everything changed. That's where a computer was put into your pocket. And I'm going to get a lot of people. I can hear the emails being written here about Android was out first. The development of the iPhone, I said, like, it goes back, its genesis goes back to the Newton. And I'm not saying who came out with it first. But in most people's hands, the first true smartphone of just no keys, nothing like that, was the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
They were exclusive to AT&T at first. And this is what a lot of people don't know. The first iPhone, there was no app store.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't think it was. I think it was the 3GS was the first one, or the 3G maybe was the first one that had the app store. But okay. What Apple was doing, and there's a lot of criticisms, and rightfully so, that they're creating digital waste in that every year they come out with a new version. And they were encouraging people to buy the new version. And in the first few iPhones, every other one had a pretty big leap in technology. A lot of it would be camera, like the camera would get better and better. And this is, I tell you, I'm going to get a lot of people mad about this too. The iPhone was never the best phone on the market, okay? It was a good one. It was a premium one. But Samsung phones were always better cameras. They were always faster. I had a Windows phone for a while.
You did.
Still the greatest operating system I've ever seen for a mobile device. But Microsoft is a software company, and they don't really back their hardware. And if it doesn't do well, they just forget about it. Apple backs their stuff. Apple keeps this stuff going. Like I said, they have 5% of the computer market, and they still make new computers. So You knew they were going to back it. While Android, you could build whatever you want. You could make your screen look whatever you want. Apple, they all kind of look the same.
Mm-hmm.
They would do things. I think it was the 4. When the iPhone 4 came out, it didn't work properly. And Jobs told people, well, you're holding it wrong. And it's like, you, SOB, I've been holding phones the same way my whole life. So, yeah. You know, there would be hiccups. Famously, when Apple Maps came out, it like would lead people literally to the middle of nowhere. I know, because it happened to me one time.
I was driving to a trail one day, and I just ended up in like St. Charles,
yeah.
You know, not anywhere where I needed to be.
But whereas Apple and Jobs and everybody will say, it's the best ever, it's the best this, it's the best this, it's very, very good. But on the other side of it, with Samsung, you go get a Samsung phone, you have 397 apps on it because of all the bloatware that AT&T or Verizon puts on it. You can't do that with an iPhone. Now, the iPhone does have a lot of, Apple puts a lot of stuff on it right now, but you can get rid of it pretty easily. And
just, yeah, so pull it down and delete it. That's what I did.
Yeah, the iPhone absolutely revolutionized that, just not computers, but our lives.
Oh, totally. It's kind of interesting, too, that we're talking about this, because the day before we record this, speaking of an app I have on my iPhone, I was looking at my Time Hop, and 13 years ago, my wife and I were trying to decide between an Android or an iPhone, and we ended up getting iPhones. So I'm like, oh, look at my status, and it was just got an iPhone. And she said, what a good decision we So mm-hmm. like even 13 years ago, we were like, we're glad that we went with an Apple product.
And that's the thing. People... A lot of people leave Android to go to the iPhone, and that's where they stay. Very few people leave the iPhone to go to Android.
Because you guys used to have Androids, mm-hmm. and now you're iPhone.
I'll say quickly where like my kind of Apple story is. As I always, like I said, I always had to use Macs when I was in high school and college, when I did newspaper and layout and things like that. I used it in the theater for our lighting boards, all those other things. But I didn't, in the career, everything I took, I never really had the need for Apple stuff. And I felt like, oh, it's overpriced and pretentious and da da da. Like I said, that Windows phone, I still absolutely adore that operating system. But my Nokia 1520 is still the greatest phone I've ever had. And that was 10 years ago. But it, just because it's ahead of its time, doesn't mean it's valuable to you, when I couldn't get apps because nobody would write them for a system that 5 people own the phones on. And so when I started to get professionally more into podcasting and things like that, I wanted stuff like Logic. I wanted Final Cut, and you had to have an Apple device to get that. So I got a laptop, and then I got an investment group. We built this very, very nice computer to do all my heavy lifting on. And I'm like, well, I have an iMac. I have a MacBook. Well, I don't have an iPad, but my son and my wife does. And I'm like, you know what? I really like my Apple Watch, but I need an iPhone for that. So I got an iPhone and I got my Apple Watch. And so, yeah, I am surrounded by it.
For somebody who was so hesitant to, you have more Apple products than I do. Because I will say, my son and my wife have iWatches, have Apple Watches, and they have iPhones. I have, as I said last week, a Garmin watch.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. That's what, because I
no, it's
running. I don't. It's got maps on, which I know Apple Watches do. I trust Garmin is based on GPS. That's why I trust Garmin more. But no, it's just because I remember you and I, when I was younger, you were young, we would argue about it all the time because you were so, you love that Windows phone. And mm-hmm. I'm like, just get an iPhone. It's the mm-hmm. best. And I know that you don't think it, but I've always thought it's the best phone on the market.
Well, I'm just saying from a technical standpoint.
Yeah, that's what I'm.
In October of 2003, going back a few years, Steve Jobs was diagnosed with a pancreatic cancer. The survival rate of pancreatic cancer is extremely low.
But anytime I hear somebody has pancreatic cancer, I think, well, I wonder how much longer they're going to be around.
Well, the thing is, Jobs actually had a form of it called islet cell neuroendocrine tumor, which is extremely treatable. A lot of people, the survival rate of this kind of pancreatic cancer is very, very high.
Okay.
He decided to treat it with meditation, homeopathic medicine, and then he decided to go vegan.
See, it's Bob Marley.
Yes.
Bob Marley's cancer started in his toe, but because Rastafarians don't believe in medical doctors, he could still be alive. Medicine is put here for a reason. It's my wife and I watch a lot of stuff where people are like, oh, I want to have a home pregnancy. Go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You can get an epidural and it's not as painful. This whole stuff drives me nuts. And I'm, as you all know, I'm very liberal and very into all that.
Well, as he let this progress for a year, he finally did. And he's told Isaacson in his book, he regretted not getting surgery earlier. Probably would have saved his life. He would probably still be alive today if he had done that.
Absolutely.
But he ended up getting another surgery, but he didn't want to do chemo or radiation therapy. You can see in some of these presentations that I've been playing, you can see his health decline, even to the point of the eye, when they do the iPad, he looks terrible. And his health did continue to decline. He made a few leaves of absence, and every time he left, Tim Cook would run Apple, but he would come back. Finally, on January 17th of 2011, he said he needs to take a leave of absence, but he plans on coming back. And he did show up for the iPad 2 launch. And on August 24th, he resigned. And he said in his letter, I've always said if there came a day when I could no longer meet my duties and expectations as Apple CEO, I'd be the first to let you know. Unfortunately, that day has come. He became the chairman of the board. Tim Cook was the CEO. 6 weeks later, on October 5th, 2011, Steve Jobs died.
Man, just get the surgery. That And you know, he refused chemo and radiation. That saved our mom.
Yes.
Like if mom hadn't done that, like,
The
medicine is put here to help us. Use it. In a situation like this, use it.
Yeah. Awful. And there was a lot of talk about what was going to happen to Apple with Jobs being gone. Now, like I'd said, he had introduced the iPad, which I famously remember everybody coming out going, why do I just want a big iPod Touch? Now,
I've never had an iPad.
I don't have it's an entertainment device. And
absolutely.
I've got, like I said, this iMac I have is incredible. All right. And it's a 27-inch screen. I watch a lot of TV on this thing. Okay.
Absolutely.
A lot of movies and stuff like that.
That's what our mom does with her iPad. She lays in her bed.
Yeah.
She watches TV shows on it. She doesn't use it to communicate.
No. My son, that's what he does. My wife, she plays Fancy Oregon Trail and watches stuff on it. And Apple's differentiated their products. Like, I know my son has a regular iPad. My wife has the iPad Air. I know a friend that has the iPad Pro or whatever. I have a laptop. Okay.
Yeah.
I've got what I need. But under Cook and Apple, I'm going to end this on kind of two big things. And like I said, I don't have any of his presentations because Tim Cook, who I think is a very, very, who's been a very good CEO of Apple, he's not the most engaging person. Tim Cook, like Jobs was private, but people knew Jobs was a rock star. Tim Cook, it came out, I want to say, in the early 2010s. Some people were talking about how, well, everybody knows Tim Cook's gay. And it's like,
okay.
Why do we
so
all
know?
Well, hold on. But we're like,
who cares, though?
Yeah. Why do we all know this? No, Tim Cook actually is on the board of the NFL, which I find kind of cool.
Oh,
but well, he did, I believe it was like 2013 or 2014. Tim Cook did come out and say, yes, I am proudly gay. And that's it. And
good man. Nope. That's his personal business. Why do we all need to be involved in these people's business?
No, but I bring it up because
I do want to say real quick before you go into it with the iPhone. I will tell you, like, I should have said this after I said I got one, but I can't remember. This is when I still had a full-time job that I would go to. And I remember one day going into the lunchroom on my lunch break, pulling out my iPhone, pulling up Netflix and watching a comedy special and thinking, well, I'm in the future. Mm-hmm. Like, it was insane that I could be at my job on this little screen watching Netflix. It was nuts to me.
No, it's absolutely crazy.
I think that was my moment of clarity where, like, oh my God, what an amazing world I live in right now.
I mean, I often say entertainment, the way we consume entertainment, there's before the iPhone and after the iPhone.
Absolutely.
Because again, people may not be doing it on the iPhone, but they're doing it on their iPad. They're walking around. I go to the gym and I see a variation of people on an iPad or an iPhone watching things.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
But Tim Cook, he did say he was on Colbert, I think, and Colbert asked him about coming out. And he's like, you know, look, I wanted to always stay private, but I think it's important for people who are not in my position to know that, look, it's okay. The reason I bring it up, though, is Tim Cook is the only openly gay CEO of a Fortune 500 company.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You would think in 2024, more people would be.
You would. You would, but he's not. Now, in Tim Cook's time, Apple has continued to introduce a variety of different things. Most famously, Jobs was there for the iPad, but all the different iPads. Probably most famously, what Cook did, and again, he's not quite the showman, it was 10 years ago that they introduced the Apple Watch. We had Fitbit, I had a Pebble Watch, all these other things. And Apple,
Fitbit.
Yeah, Apple was this premium brand. As a matter of fact, there was one of the earliest Apple Watches you could buy for like $30,000.
What?
Yeah. Apple has kind of figured out that's not their market, and they've just gone towards, you know, we're a nice watch that can do the things you want to do. It's not a specialized. I mean, there is the Ultra Apple Watch or whatever. But like you said, runners are not using Apple Watch. People like me, I'm using Apple Watch as it gets my notifications. It tells me to stand up. If I want to go for a run or exercise, it tracks that for me. But you have a specialized need.
Yeah, and case in point, last night I'm a board member on the St. Louis Track Club, and I went to a meeting, and there was maybe, I don't know, 10 of us there last night. Not a single Apple Watch in the crowd. They were either Coros watches or Garmin watches. And again, my Garmin, like, I run long distances and I go in the woods. So the good thing about a Garmin is the battery power lasts over a week. I only charge my watch like every 8 days or whatever. So when I did have an Apple Watch, my problem was, oh, if I'm going to go on a 10-mile run, I will have to charge it as soon as I get home or else it will die.
Yeah.
With the Garmin, I'm like, oh, and like my wife has an Apple Watch. My son has an Apple Watch. They charge it every single night.
Oh, I charge mine in the middle of the day.
I charge my Garmin on a Tuesday night. And as of today on this recording, it's still at 74%.
Yeah. And people are going to ask, they were like, well, which one do you have? I have the 7. Okay.
I have a Fenix 5X for people who are curious.
Yeah.
What kind of Garmin I have.
Well, under Cook, though, they did introduce things like the Apple Pencil that Jobs would have never done.
I know what that is.
That's for the iPad if you want to do like drawing and things like that.
Because
you had things like the Microsoft Surface that would come with the pen. They introduced the HomePod, which is their version of like the smart speaker. Again, they're not really making headway. I mean, Apple is an iPhone company. They did end up discontinuing the iPod. Now the Apple Watch has become one of their big sellers. Yeah. So under Cook, the company's profitable, but where he's really made his mark is on things like services, things like Apple Fitness, Apple Music. I forgot to say with the iPod, the word podcast comes from iPod because people in New York would do these digital shows and they would download them to their iPod. So Apple Podcast is still the largest podcast network out there. The big one he did was creating their TV studio, Apple TV. And it's not just a TV studio, it's also a movie studio. They have an agreement with A24. They did this in 2017 to create original films. I don't think any of them have come out yet, but they have a couple of shows that have done very well. One, I will shout out a show called For All Mankind. Last season kind of sucked, but the three seasons before it were pretty good.
I don't have Apple TV, but I really want to watch Severance.
They've won an Oscar for the movie Coda. That was an Apple production.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Killers of the Flower Moon and Napoleon were both Apple productions. They're in there. I mean, they are a big-time player, and this is where they're really, really getting a lot of their shine, a lot of their money moving into these more service-oriented things while they continue to sell you Apple Watches and iPhones. The big criticism of Tim Cook, though, is he's not Steve Jobs, and he's not making revolutionary products, and he's not seeing where the future is. He's not building the infrastructure for the future. Something Tim Cook has also done is he's acquired a lot of companies. Like, they acquired the Beats headphone companies.
Okay.
In 2015, they acquired an augmented reality company called Mateo. It's from Volkswagen. It's a German company. And this was at a time when the Oculus, Facebook, or their parent company, Meta, were starting to come out with these home headsets, these home devices where I have one. I thought it would be a future area for podcasting. It's not. But Google had come out with Google Glass, which was like a little computer that would put information on your eye. Like,
would I ever want?
plus, it also had a camera that nobody knew if it was always on. So it just didn't work. But this idea, and I know being in this is a much longer podcast than I would want it, but this idea of augmented and virtual reality and be able to work in an infinite workspace is attractive, but nobody's been able to really figure out how it's going to work. Jobs knew that people wanted a simple computer. Businesses want complex computers, but people wanted simple computers, and the Macintosh and the iMac came ready to use. He knew people wanted their music with them. He knew people wanted to be able to do everything on their phone.
Yeah.
He even knew that you wanted to hold a screen in your hand to watch TV. Nobody knows how to make this augmented virtual reality work, but it didn't stop Tim Cook, and Apple unveiled their first new real product since the Apple Watch. It came out in February of this year, the Apple Vision Pro.
I don't know what that is.
It's a headset that
I'm very much not a fan of virtual reality. It makes me sick. Like, well, not like I'm disgusted by it. It makes me physically ill.
This is VR and AR in that you can see through it and you can do things like. One of the things that Apple showed you could do with it is you could walk around and let's say you're cooking something and you have multiple things on the stove and you say, you point to the pan that you have green beans and you say, set a timer for 2 minutes. And then you see a 2 minute timer over that pan. And then you point to your pan that you have chicken and say, set a timer for 10 minutes. And then you see 10 minutes over that. And then you can walk away and those timers will still be sitting there. Ty, you can go to the Apple store today and they'll do like a 30 minute demonstration with you. And I did that. And I watched a part of an NBA game, and it was unbelievable.
Was it?
It is the technology on this thing is out of this world. Here's the problem. What are you going to use it for?
Exactly. And do I want to spend that money on it? Like, when I cook, I like to do it without headsets.
If you're going to watch a movie, watch this incredible movie, what's your wife going to do? Is she going to buy? Exactly. By the way, this thing costs $3,500.
Yeah, so we're not spending $7,000 to have two of those in our house.
But let's say the whole family, let's watch a movie together. You're going to spend $14,000 so you can all wall yourselves off behind this headset?
Absolutely not. See, that's another issue I had with virtual reality. And I think the pandemic like really kind of stunted the growth of this stuff because I think people like being around other people. Like most people like to be around and talk to other people and stuff like that. So yeah, I couldn't imagine me, my wife, and my two kids all with our virtual headsets on. Watching the same movie when we can just sit on our couch and love seat and watch the same movie on our television or on our computer screen.
Yeah. Well, after a few months, Apple has already cut orders for it. It is not selling well.
Yeah.
But like I said, Apple sticks by their products. I'm curious where they go from here. But I'm going to end, Ty, on something that Apple did last week, did the week between us recording these two episodes. So they unveiled their new line of iPads. There's no more headphone jack on an iPad, but like when we're talking about wired headphones, no. I don't have wired headphones. I
only do for recording purposes.
I shouldn't say that. I do have wired headphones on now, but for the most part, I have my AirPods and
I have a JBL wireless headphones. I don't like AirPods. I don't like
headphones. No, my wife doesn't either. But she has a really nice Bose over the ear. So
sure.
They released their new iPads. They came out with a commercial. And I did not record this commercial, but the commercial, because they're talking about everything you can do with the iPad Pro, how awesome it is. And it was like a bunch of musical instruments, paint, toys, video games and stuff. And it was underneath one of those huge hydraulic presses and it presses and crushes all of that stuff. And then it comes up with the iPad. And it's like, you can do all this on the iPad. Well, I saw that ad and I was like, so Apple is saying it's good to destroy everything that makes creativity just for the iPad. And I felt
so
like
I have the iPad.
I felt like maybe I'm alone with this. Oh no. I think it was Colin Farrell came out. A bunch of artistic people. I think Greta Gerwig was one. And they were like, Apple, this is on the heels of the writers and actors strike and AI and everything. Mm-hmm. They're like,
yeah,
don't crush creativity. Like, totally. don't do that image. That's
a
bad
big
image.
Misstep. Yeah, that's a big misstep.
And Apple took the commercial down and apologized.
Good. That's good. I'm glad they did that.
At least
they didn't like dig their heels in the ground.
No.
Like, no, we're going to make it even more AI.
Yeah. So Apple still, I mean, I could go in, yes, like every digital, like every company they avoid taxes and there's some environmental things. Apple has been very big on trying to do corporate speak for environment stuff. They're better than most. It doesn't make them good. But as a whole, it's a company that's still making a lot of money, even though I think it's had two quarters where it hasn't made a profit. But it's a company built on innovation. It's a company that's still innovating. They may not be making the products, but they're making really damn good television and hopefully damn good movies.
Well, their phone, they make new phones all the time. Yeah. Their phones always have updates. There's always something, like you said. And I'm not the type of person who I'll get a 12 and then I'll get a 13. Now I'll get a 4. I wait for a while and then I just get whatever.
Oh, my first iPhone was an 11.
Okay.
And yeah, then I just got this 15.
Yeah, so that's the thing too. I don't buy the new one every year. I kind of give it a while, and I like to go the refurbished route with stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's usually
I mean, it's for another time. I remember I told my wife, I go, I'm going to do something I've never done and I'll never do again. I'm going to go get the iPhone the day it comes out. And so I went to the mall. And I saw the line and I asked the Apple employee there and I was like, how long is this line? She's like, oh, probably about an hour. So I'm like, no. So I went down to the AT&T store and I said, do you guys have the new iPhones? Yeah, but we only have it in blue. I'm like, that's all I want. So I never really got to live that experience. And then I'm like, oh, I got my new phone, but I'm weird about numbers. I don't like even numbers and I'm not crazy about the number 17, but I love the number 19. And so my next phone will be the 19.
So you don't like grandpa's birthday. May he rest in peace.
Yes,
you like your
that's
birthday.
Right. That's so. Right. So that's, but Ty, that's it. That's the story of Apple.
It's pretty, you know, it's funny. It's fascinating because I was talking to Kirk, our buddy Kirk, about this last week. And I was like, yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about, but I'm learning a lot of stuff. So it was interesting to learn about this company that my family gives a lot of money to.
A lot of people do. They yeah. There's a lot of questions on whether or not the most valuable company in the world. It's always up between them and Microsoft. It's always like whoever's bigger. I did, before I leave, there were like two things I forgot to say. I was looking at my notes here. One is when I was doing the commercials and the iPhone first came out, documentarian Errol Morris did a lot of commercials where they had people just sitting there telling them all the great things they could do with their iPhone. One of those commercials that I think has been scrubbed from the internet is there was a famous one of a pilot saying that we were getting ready to leave for an hour and a half flight, and we were told there's a 3-hour weather delay. So I popped up my iPhone, looked at the weather app, and said, oh, the weather's clear, we can go. And so they let us go. Well, everybody on the planet, including pilots, said, that's a bunch of BS. No way is the tower going to say delay, and then the pilot look at his iPhone and say, oh, it's okay. And I'm like, ah, go ahead.
I thought you were going to say it was either Sully Sullenberger or the dude from Flight.
No.
No.
Apple likes to overstate what their things can do. The other thing I was going to tell is when Apple was falling apart in the 90s and somebody talked to Michael Dell of Dell Computers, would you take this over? And he famously said, what Apple needs to do is close itself down and give its money back to its shareholders. Well, it was around 2004 or 2005, Apple became more valuable than Dell. And Steve Jobs wrote a short email to all employees saying stocks go up and down, but let's just be happy today that our company that should have been given back to the shareholders and shut down is more valuable than Michael Dell's today.
Jobs woke up and chose violence every day, it sounds like.
All right, Ty. Well, you're going to have to play either the Wozniak or the Tim Cook and when I'm Jobs.
Wozniak, so. All day. I look like Seth Rogen's version.
You do not look like Tim Cook. But
I don't even know what he looks like.
Where are people going to find you?
Find me on Facebook and Instagram, Ty Kulik, TYKULIK, all lowercase. Come read my stuff on SeedSing, SEEDSING.com, sports, pop culture, reviews, all kind of stuff you could want there. You could hear me on Chucklehead Chat, the podcast Chucklehead Chat, hosted by our buddy Glenn Adams. check out our Patreon. I get to do a first watch rewatch coming up, which I'm excited about. So check that out. Most importantly, though, check me out on here, the Ex-Millennial Man podcast. Rate, review us, tell your friends about us. And as always, Black Lives.
Yeah, repeat all that. Seed saying Ex-Millennial Man. We're coming up, closing up on the second season of First Watch Rewatch. So go check that out. And I was sad on the last one. Josie and the Pussycats wasn't as great as I remember. Still good. Oh. I still think worth watching. Okay. But go listen. Go listen. You'll hear Tina and I's thoughts on it. And well, with all that being said, we thank you for your ears. Anything else that you may use to listen to the Ex-Millennial Man podcast. Remember, we are here every Saturday for free, wherever you find your fine podcasting shows. And I guess, Ty, maybe what I should have said is, if they got to do those Mac PC commercials again, like you said, we're dressed for it. All right. Talk to you next time.
Stay fresh, cheese bags.
The Ex-Millennial Man podcast is a production of SeedSane.com, fully owned by R.D. Kulik & Associates, LLC. Producers Ty Kulik and Ryan Kulik, adequately engineered by Ryan Kulik.